accession number 18823, Reel 2.
Jack Tennis, Reel 2.
The problem was they were victualled for the return trip so that they didn't take any food from Britain. And unfortunately, we'd only been at sea about 3 days when the food deteriorated. And the boys refused to eat the dinner. The captain and the victualling officer came down onto the mess deck to see what the trouble was. And nobody would eat the lunch. And one boy, as the officer was going out of the watertight door, you had to bend your head to get out, and somebody had a dumpling on their plate, and they threw it, and it hit the victualling officer in the back of the neck, which he wasn't very pleased about. And strangely enough, after that, the food improved again.
Did you participate in all this yourself?
No, I was on watch at the time. And my relief came up and asked me if I'd minded staying on as they'd got trouble on the mess deck. And I finished up doing about an hour over my normal watch. But it seemed to have done the trick, and everything after that was okay, food-wise.
Any other problems aboard ship?
No, not really. The only problem we did have later on, we did a trip to South Africa. We had to take aircraft to the fleet arm at Cape Town, and we brought 8 Canadian nurses back. And halfway back, which was a 3-week trip from Cape Town to Norfolk in Virginia, about halfway, we had an outbreak of diphtheria. And when we got back to Norfolk, we had to go into quarantine. And the American medical authorities came aboard. They swabbed everybody's throat. There was about half a dozen more they took ashore for treatment. And they thought that had all cleared up. And 2 days later, there was another outbreak. The Canadian nurses weren't allowed ashore either. They were all in quarantine. And strangely enough, the second time the American medical authorities came on board, they swabbed our own sick bay staff, and it was one of our sick bay staff who was a carrier of diphtheria. And they took him ashore, and the diphtheria subsided, and that was it. And we never saw the lad who was a carrier. We didn't see him anymore, so what became of him, we don't know. And that was the story of the diphtheria outbreak.
And that was in 1944?
Yeah.
What do you remember happening next?
Well, in another incident, when we were at Cape Town, we had one of our leading seamen. He was murdered. The area near the docks was known as District 6, or was then. And I don't know whether they'd had a bit of drink, but they were coming through District 6, which you were advised not to do on your own. And somebody knifed him in the jugular vein, and before they could get him back on board, he was dead.
What was so special about District 6?
That was the native quarter, and you were advised, when we used to go through, we used to march through Liberty Men to get into Cape Town, because District 6 was the dark quarter, and that was where they used to get all the troubles. And you were told never to go through on your own or in twos. Always wait till there's a party of you coming back to the ship, rather than attempt it on your own.
Was this crime related, or was it because the black people were hostile?
Oh no, I think that was crime related to get the money. And there were several attacks, but mostly they got away in time. But this leading seaman, Box, was his name, and he couldn't get away, and they knifed him in his jugular vein, and that was it.
Did you know him?
Oh yeah, he was one of our crew, and strange to say that often happened. We had one or two cases where pay books were stolen, especially when they'd had a few drinks. Money was often stolen from the pockets, and they were left wherever they laid. And that was quite common. But being a teetotaler, I never had that problem.
And when was that about, that murder happened?
September 1944. We unloaded the aircraft which we'd taken, and we went into dry dock to have ASDICs fitted and flight deck repitched. The third crew member lost since leaving Vancouver. September the 15th, we left Cape Town. October the 3rd, 1944, we arrived in Norfolk, Virginia. October the 6th, we left Norfolk for New York. We joined a convoy for the United Kingdom. Date not noted. Very rough trip. Gales most of the way. Damaged plates in forecastle. Store flooded containing bundles for Britain from the people of the USA.
Well, what do you mean by bundles for Britain?
Well, they used to send clothing for people who'd been bombed out and had lost everything. And that was nearly all new stuff, nearly all new clothing. And this compartment that got flooded, when we got back to UK, all the washing, all the goods that they'd sent were soaked in salt water. They all had to be washed in fresh water, and they were pegged out on the flight deck to dry. And November the 3rd, 1944, we left Greenock, arrived in Belfast. November the 4th, 1944, we left Belfast, and we went as a single ship, no escort, arrived at Gibraltar on November the 8th. November the 9th, we left Gibraltar. November the 14th, arrived Port Said, Egypt. Shore leave granted. Not a very nice place. Plenty of flies and smells. November the 15th, we proceeded through the Suez Canal to Port Suez. On the way, we developed engine trouble through the canal. Another escort carrier, HMS Battler, she was moored astern of us, and we swapped cargoes. The Battler had to deliver our Hellcats to Bombay, and we, the Thane, had to come back to UK for repairs, and they were not very happy.
So what kind of planes were Hellcats?
They were an American, the latest thing from the American for the Fleet Air Arm. They had folding wings so they could go up and down on the lift, and easily stored in the hangar deck. November the 27th, 44, we left Port Said. December the 1st, we arrived at Gibraltar. The 2nd of December, we left Gibraltar, escorted by HMS Croom, a destroyer. We had mountainous seas through the Bay of Biscay. We got more damage. December the 6th, we arrived at Greenock. And in that trip, which was 3 days, I think we managed to pass about 4 visual signals to our destroyer escort. December the 17th, 1944, I was drafted back to Petersfield, which was the signal school, HMS Mercury. December the 18th, I went on 17 days foreign service leave, home for Christmas. January the 4th, returned from leave. January the 26th, drafted to Naval Party 2422.
Could I just interrupt you there? About going back to the Thane, was it a happy ship for you?
Yes, very good. Very nice ship. When we first commissioned, as it was built by the Americans, we had all bunks, no hammocks to sling. We had 2 iced water fountains on the ship, which was virtually unknown in the Royal Navy. We had a drinks bar, which were known as a goffer bar, which sold soft drinks only. And that was something you never saw on a Royal Navy ship. And unfortunately, when we got back to UK, when we came on leave, the time we got back after our 8 days leave, the two iced water fountains had gone. The Goffer Bar, where they sold the drinks, that was had turned into a paint store, so we lost everything. Back to RN.
You said that in early 45 you were posted to Naval Party 2422.
And February the 10th, returned off leave to HMS Mercury. Joined HMS Glenroy again at Greenock. We sailed at midnight to join the convoy for the Far East. Many landing ship infantry, including HMS Largs, the Queen Emma, Sefton, Sanfoin, Princess Beatrix, and many more. A large destroyer escort. Contact received on way to Gibraltar. Destroyers dropped depth charges, but nothing seen. March the 7th, we arrived at Gibraltar. Left Gibraltar same day. We arrived at Port Said March the 13th. March the 14th, left Port Said through the Suez Canal for the third time. Arrived Port Suez. March the 15th, we left Port Suez through the Red Sea to Aden, arriving on March the 18th, 1945. This must be one of the worst places on earth.
Why was that?
The terrific heat. There was nothing green. It was just brown earth and mud everywhere. The only little green piece was outside the naffy. And I think the lads there, they must have watered it continuously all day for the grass to grow. We refueled at Aden. March the 19th, we left Aden. The 25th, we arrived at Colombo in Ceylon. Very nice place. We left PM the same day. March the 28th, arrived Bombay. April the 16th, we left Bombay. April the 20th, arrived at Trincomalee in Ceylon, which was the main naval base for Southeast Asia. April the 22nd, we left Trincomalee. April the 25th, arrived at Chalk Pew. It's in Ramri Island off Burma. April the 27th, I was transferred to LCH 101 for Operation Dracula, the landings at Rangoon. I was on Captain Bell's staff, and where he went, we had to go.
It was LCH
101. 101.
Can you tell me about what kind of a ship this was?
Yeah, Landing Craft Headquarters. It was entirely for radio. The LCHs went right into the beachhead, and standing off were frigates with radio gear, and further out was the big ships with the bigger radio equipment. So it was like a series of leapfrogging, small ship to the medium, medium to the large, with the radios. And we were doing the communications for the army until they were established on the beachhead.
And what kind of facilities did you have aboard for the crew there, and you in particular?
Very crowded, but it was only a short trip, and we were working two watches, which was four on, four off, four on, four off, day and night. And
did you expect there to be enemy opposition when you landed at Rangoon?
Yes, we expected it, but fortunately there was no opposition. And as far as I know, the only casualties, LCT 1238, she was mined and eight killed on her.
Did you see that?
We saw the wreck afterwards, but not at the time, because the LCH that I was on, we led the LCAs, which carried the infantry, we led them up to their point of departure, and where we stopped, they had to turn and go into the beachhead. So the the LCT that was mined was actually astern of us. So we went over the minefield and got away with it.
And what was Captain Bell like?
He was a very nice, a gentleman, very good. And May the 3rd, we proceeded up Rangoon River. We entered the city at 5 p.m. May the 19th, I was drafted off LCH 101 to HMS Waveney, which was a frigate. We left Rangoon. May the 23rd, arrived Colombo.
If I could just stop you there, what had you seen ashore in Rangoon?
Ashore? Well, the 14th Army had been fighting all the way through Burma, and we put the Indian divisions ashore in Rangoon. They cleared the town of what little opposition there was, and when the 14th Army arrived, Rangoon was their main target, and they weren't very pleased, and there was quite a bit of fighting between the 14th Army. I shouldn't say this really, but it happened. There was fighting between the 14th Army and the Indian divisions that we put ashore.
What form did the fighting take?
Pardon?
What form did the fighting take?
Oh, that started off mainly abuse to each other, mainly from the 14th Army, and towards the end of the day that got to firing rifles at one another.
So were people killed and injured?
I don't know what the casualties were, but we went aboard and stayed aboard, kept out of trouble.
What had the Indian troops been like aboard the landing craft?
Well, apart from their cooking, the awful smells, that we had no problem. They mixed okay, but their food was very highly, what is the word?
Spiced.
Spiced, yeah. And wherever you were in the ship, you could smell it.
Did you let them know that you didn't like it?
There wasn't much you could do about it, really. They had to eat, and they ate different food than we did. where did we get to? May the 23rd, arrived Colombo. May the 24th, we left Colombo. May the 27th, arrived at Bombay. I was drafted ashore to Combined Operations Headquarters in preparation for Operation Zipper, which was the landings at Port Dickson and Port Swettenham in Malaya on the west coast. I was doing working for the Navy until August the 16th in Shore Base, which was very comfortable.
This is at Bombay?
Yes. And we had terrific food. It was as good as a first-class hotel. We were waited on hand and foot, unknown in the Royal Navy. And August the 16th, I rejoined HMS Waveney and left Bombay. August the 20th, we arrived at Colombo. 21st, we left Colombo. 22nd, arrived at Mandapam in India. We carried out a full exercise for the landings that we were going to do. August the 25th, we left Mandapam. August the 26th, arrived Madras. While we were at Madras, everybody got shore leave, and as it was the last run ashore before the landings, quite a lot of them had a few drinks. And when they come back to get on the Liberty boats to take them back to their ships, there was pushing from the rear, hundreds of men on the quayside, and quite a lot of them got pushed in. Unfortunately, there wasn't one man lost.
What did you all feel about the impending landings in Malaya?
Well, strangely enough, it's more of a worry before you go than when you actually get there. Once the operation starts, everything is just forgotten. You're doing your job, and that's it. But on the way, you tend to worry quite a bit. But as I said, once the landings actually start, you're so busy, you have no time to think about anything. September the 3rd, we left Madras. September the 9th, we arrived between Port Dickson and Port Swettenham, Malaya, West Coast. Operation Zipper. Japs surrendered after atom bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. Very fortunate for us. September the 11th, we left.
So what did Operation Zipper amount to as far as you were concerned?
Well, as far as we were concerned, the landing was carried on as planned, but there was no opposition, as it was through the atomic bombs that the Japanese surrendered. But if they hadn't, I'm afraid there would have been very heavy casualties, as afterwards we found they'd got ships, small ships, absolutely loaded with explosives in the bows to ram into our ships with. They had the suicide planes on the airfields all ready for us, and I think there would have been terrific casualties if they hadn't surrendered.
So you landed yourself in which ship?
No, I was on HMS Waveney for the landing, which we laid off. We were about half a mile off the beachhead.
And what was HMS Waveney?
She was a frigate, a headquarters radio, another radio ship. They had to have the guns taken off, incidentally, and light anti-aircraft guns fitted, because she was so full of radio equipment, when they fired their heavy guns, they shattered the WT sets. So they had to have lighter guns put on. September the 24th, we left Port Swettenham. September the 25th, we arrived in Singapore. We got shore leave, and there was quite a lot of damage in Singapore, as presumably from air raids by either the Americans or the Australians. September the 29th, we arrived off Cap St. Jacques for Operation Masterdom.
Where is Cap St. Jacques?
Cap St. Jacques is at the entrance to the Rangit River that leads up to Saigon, in French Indochina.
And what was Operation Masterdom?
It was to get the British prisoners out, take medical supplies and foodstuffs to them.
What did you see in that operation?
Well, September the 30th, we sailed up the river to Saigon. We tied up alongside the wall at 12:30 p.m. We were the first Allied ship to enter Saigon. We got a terrific welcome from the French civilians who'd been interned. Unfortunately, I was on watch. The rest of the crew were given shore leave. And in our mess, there was only two of us, and we were both on watch. When we came down at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, the cupboard had been stripped bare. They hadn't left us a piece of food anywhere, which we didn't bother because that was easily replaced. And I think if I was in their situation where they'd been half-starved, I would have done the same. October the 2nd, the French ship Richelieu arrived off Cap St. Jacques. The Lee Triumphant, HMS Queen Emma and Princess Beatrix arrived in Saigon. October the 7th, drafted off HMS Waveney with Captain Bell's Senior Officer of Assault Group WT, staffed to shore base to open signal station. Captain Bell became Naval Officer in Charge Saigon. The Waveney left 18th of October. November the 27th, drafted to pilot vessel LCIL and 216 at Cap St. Jacques, French Indochina. That was where we had to search every ship that came in. Returned to the signal station in Saigon December the 15th. HMS Guardian arrived Saigon, HMS Challenger. December the 18th, HMS Loch Lomond arrived in Saigon. December the 19th, HMS Guardian left Saigon for Hong Kong. HMS Loch Lomond left for Singapore. HMS Nith arrived Saigon. December the 26th, we were drafted to HMS Nith at 7 a.m. We left Saigon at 10 a.m, glad to get away from the Civil War.
How much of the Civil War did you see?
Quite a bit. They used to be riding a motorcycle, perhaps would come through the town. The pillaging passenger, as they passed the cafe, would hurl a grenade in. And the silly thing about the episode was that they killed more of their own people than the French, who they were after.
Did you feel yourself in danger?
Yes, we used to be fired on at night time from, we were on top of the signal station, which was about four stories high. And as soon as you used to signal to the ships, especially at night with the light, they would fire at us from the opposite bank. Eventually, they built us a sandbag wall between the opposite bank and the signal station. And from then on, it was quite safe.
Were you able to go about and do things ashore in Saigon?
Yes. When we first went there, there was no trouble at all. We could go out, you could stay out all night. And the trouble was, the British commander, he gave word to the Annamites that while British forces were there, no French troops would arrive. And it wasn't long before the French ship started to arrive with French troops on board, and once they came, then I'm afraid we got involved, because we lent the French troops some of our landing craft, and instead of putting the French flag up, they kept the white ensign flying, and from that day we were involved, and they used to fire at us as well as the French. So it was a good place to get away from.
What was the attitude of the French towards the British presence?
Well, strangely enough, once or twice they had one or two minor scraps with the British, mostly with the Navy boys, and there were very few British forces there. The first ones to arrive were the RAF regiment. Then after that, there was soldiers from Burma started to arrive, Indian troops, but there still wasn't enough troops to hold the Annamites at bay. So they actually armed Japanese prisoners, and this must be the only time through the war that the Japanese were fighting with the British against the Annamites.
Did the Japanese actually fight?
Yes, yeah, they did quite a bit of fighting with the British forces. And the French wanted to get a medal for the British forces that was served in French Indochina, but the British government of the day wouldn't have it. They didn't want to get involved because...
Because what?
Yeah, because the war that was started with the Annamites eventually turned into the Vietnamese War. So we were in right from the start of the Vietnamese War.
When you said there was friction between the British and the French in Saigon, was it French civilians who were involved?
No. As I said, we lent the French some of our landing craft, and when they went in, they kept the white ensign flying, and when they started firing at them, once they started to leave the landing craft, the Annamites fired at them from the shore, and apparently I wasn't involved, but apparently the French ran back onto the landing craft, and the British officer in charge gave orders to the British gunners to open fire with the ship's guns, which they did and drove the enemy off.